Hi, it's Sunday, February 17th, and you're listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll Music Show. And from all the way from the state of New Jersey, this is Adam Bush and Common Rotation. That was music slightly off your radar and the band Common Rotation. And in case you're wondering, you're listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show.
Crossfire.
I'm your host, Jay Hoskins, and across to me is my co-host, the one and the only Crafty. And we're here to talk about Crossfire. And I wanted to say a few words about Crossfire. First of all, I wanted to say that December and January albums really suck. The releases have been not great. We've been waiting for some really new albums to come out, some interesting albums we've been waiting for a while. Some of the things we're waiting for is Sheryl Crow's Detours, Black Crow's War Paint. And in March, it's Judas Priest and their rock opera Nostradamus. But until then, I thought what we'd do is we'd take a couple of bands and albums that people have been talking a lot about at the end of the year and have been on a number of top 10 lists and a number of top 25 lists, depending on what magazine you look at. And they have sort of gone over the hump. They have come into the new year as well and are still being hotly touted. There's some a great album. One of the albums, Feist, The Reminder, is up for several Grammy Awards in the next week and a half. So I thought that Crafty and I would take a look at that tonight during Crossfire. So first up, The National. The National Boxer. That's the name of the album. This band has gotten a lot of buzz about, you know, they're original, they're great, they're fantastic. Pace Magazine, this alternative American magazine, put them as number one band and album of the year. I'm not so there as they are. I think it's a really, really interesting album. It took me a while to get into it. The voice of Matt Berninger, who is the lead singer, is kind of a bit like Nick Cave. One of the songs, Fake Empire, is really interesting, which opens the album, has different layers. It starts very sparsely instruments, and another instrument gets added, it sort of builds up. It's really, really kind of nice. The lyrics are interesting. There's a line in one of the songs where your mind is racing like a pronoun, which is really kind of neat. At times, they sound like there's a little bit of Killers there. At times, there's a little bit of Echo and the Bunnymen there. There's a little bit of that sort of walk back to the 80s and Echo and the Bunnymen. Strangely enough, a band from Canada, The Tragically Hip, though Crafty does not see where that comes from. That's my take on The National Boxer. Crafty?
Well, I just got to listen to it actually the last couple of days, and I thought I'd take it in for the ultimate backup review at work, and people said, good choice for morning music. And John actually said, what did he say now? It was tea and crumpets, please. The Nick Cave thing's there, you know. I guess you could sort of see the Tragic Hip and the rambling kind of lyrical output. I'm gonna have to give it a few more listens before I can actually, you know, put more thoughts to it. It's fresh on me, but we wanted to get it up there for this show, so.
It's not an album that jumps right out at you.
Absolutely not.
Well, either, it gets under your skin, and you
either
have to...
either did Nick Cave. The first time I heard Nick Cave, it was not the, you know. Then they start haunting you, and so again, that's it. I could
haunting is a good name for his voice. Yeah, it really describes his voice really well.
Yeah, well, definitely will stay. I mean, I think you were concerned that if I took it to work and played it, it would get pulled off. It would get KB'd, and he called in sick today, so it wasn't a problem. But actually, you know. It was perfect, you know, because I tried to put on something else, and it was good, and you know, it's that kind of music that's sort of, you know, there's nothing really there to offend you, and more appears with layers as the layers come down.
Yeah, and I really wish they had a lyric sheet with the album, because there is a lot of really interesting lyrics there, but you really have to like sit down and listen really, really carefully.
Well, that's probably the point of it,
to get
it?
Them all. Yeah, you're probably right. The next album we're going to look at is an album that has gotten tons and tons of praise, and Crafty would really like to say it's gotten tons and tons of hype.
Well, hold on before you go on. Don't forget, I suffer from hypeitis.
Hypeitis.
I couldn't listen to Elvis Costello until the hype, till years after, till he was like totally almost obscure, and he got didn't even know he put out an album. And I didn't listen to Van Halen until after David Lee Roth had left the band. Because I have hypeitis, so.
I hope you take care of that.
It's a time thing. Like, it means I should probably be able to get into Feist in about a year or two or more.
Yeah, okay.
Though I saw her live on Jimmy
sure
Kimmel.
She's waiting with bated breath.
Yes. I saw her on the Jimmy Kimmel show on the bus scene, and I thought, you know, that's about as unplugged as you can get and, like, revealing as you can get. And they're definitely a good band and good. She's a good live artist. There's no doubt. It's the real deal. That's somebody actually performing and singing.
I think we've plugged Jimmy Kimmel so much on this show. Well, I mean, people he's a great, should be tuning in to watch it.
Well, he's a great source of new music. Some of the best music that some of the best bands that I'd never seen before. Like, I mean, Luna Coil. I would never even known who they were without Jimmy Kimmel or you. The only two people in the world I ever heard talk about them.
Well, let's get back to Feist. I heard the hype. I heard lots and lots of hype about this CD, and I have the first CD, and there's songs in the first CD I really like a lot, and I was prepared to hate this album. I was prepared to put it on and just go, there's nothing to this at all, and I couldn't do it. It is a great album, and the people who are hyping it for once are on the money. It's a very organic album, in the sense that you can really tell that she sat back and figured out how she wants instruments around her voice and how she wants different sounds, songs and sounds to come together to create a whole sort of audio experience. I mean, Sea Line is an incredibly interesting song. It starts out sort of, you know, very, very sparse, and then has a breakdown that goes into this like rock and bopping sort of guitar, and it's sounds like it shouldn't even be there. It sounds like it just shouldn't work, but it does. There are other songs, the 1-2-3-4. Everyone's heard the 1-2-3-4. It's been connected to the iPhones commercial. I think it's the iPhones commercial, isn't it? Or the iPod. Do you realize there's a banjo on that song, Crafty? There's a banjo on that sound, a song, and there's also like horns that come in with the banjo. And it's really an interesting sort of instrument to try and put into like what you could essentially call a pop song. And I found this album very interesting, and I found every time you go back to it, you get something more from it. You have to listen to it a number of different times. The first time I listened to it, it didn't hit me. But as you listen more and more, it's almost like a Bjork album. You know, Bjork has a way of taking her voice and then taking things that actually just make her voice into another instrument. And I think that Feist actually does that. I'm really surprised that it's getting as much buzz from a lot of the straight sort of press in regards to not the, you know, the quirky sort of press or the alternative sort of press, because it is a rather sort of strange and quirky album. But I like it.
Yeah, it seems to me every decade or every 4 or 5 years, and in every town and in every city, there's a Feist to me. Like, it's good. I'm going to maybe come back to bite me and regret this, but, like, you know, I'm not going to drop names, but, you know, like, I guess 2 years ago it was
Sarah Hammer.
Sarah Hammer. You know, she was the quirky singer-songwriter with this, you know, great tunes and is organic, you know, made in the kitchen. It's just like, you know, you go back to the 80s, there's always like, there's probably more quirky, organic, grows on you, you know, singers, girl singer songwriters than there are Stevie Ray Vaughan clone bands or, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan wannabe bands. Like, it's just, you know, and not that they should stop, because like one of those guys is going to break through with an album of actual tunes and really good playing. And maybe, you know, put that music back where it's been. And it's certainly great that Feist is out there. Like, I mean, not to go back.
And she's Canadian, which is nice.
Well, these days, I don't think there's such a thing as Canadian. I mean, everything. American-Canadian. I mean, with the, I mean, when you got bands from, you know, never heard of it, Ontario on the Letterman show, then there's, you know, saying that she's Canadian is like almost an insult. Like, you know, like saying like she's like an Anne Murray or something back when, you know, you had five Canadian artists and the rest of them you never heard of. But yeah, I'm looking forward. I do put the album on, and actually when I put it on, the hype-itis wasn't really bothering, because, you know, after seeing her that live on the bus show, you know, she'd already earned her respect for me. Like, I already respected them as a band and her as a singer and as a writer. Because that takes a lot to be live on TV in a bus performing to people and sounding good. Because, I mean, just tons of other people that try things like that don't sound good. It was this, you know, it was that busker attempt by the guy from Our Lady Peace trying to busk in the streets to launch his New Direction. Yeah, and who did I see? It was even worse. Brian Mello or whatever his name, one of the Canadian Idol winners, singing live off the floor kind of thing. And, oh, my God, stop. How did you ever win? They must have Atari Auto-Tune on the Canadian Idol. And they turn it off when they don't like someone and leave it on when they like somebody.
Okay, because let's not connect Feist to Canadian Idol. Let's just keep her in her own little category.
You know what? While you're there for a second, what if Feist had gone through Canadian Idol? Do you think she would have made it? Probably not. You know, and 5 years from now, will Feist be a career? And
well, Crafty, Feist is part of that whole arts and crafts creative sort of platform that's come from in Toronto, which encompasses bands like Stars and Emily Haynes and Metric and Dume Saint Think and certainly the Broken Social Scene. They all support each other. They all, you know, they all do things together. And I don't think any of them are ever going to let people just sort of drift away to the fact, unless they don't want to do it anymore, of into nothingness. You know, they'll just always have these creative juices going together. And if Feist isn't doing something by herself, Feist will be doing something with Broken Social Scene, or she'll be doing something with her boyfriend, Kevin Drew, who is also the lead singer for Broken Social Scene. And there'll be different things they'll do. And I think there'll always be a support group for each other.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic debut, basically. She's had some other earlier indie album I don't know about, but you know, hats off to her. First album out of the gate, Grammy Awards, and not hey I'm your girlfriend. Like, when they Feist is obviously a singer songwriter calling Avril Lavigne a singer songwriter. I mean, she learned how to write pop hit records from the Matrix. I mean, she, no matter what she says that she helped them, I don't think she'd exist without them. But I mean, like, you know, I think 5 years from now, Feist will be much more proud of her career than Avril will of hers.
Yeah. Okay. Enough said.
Yeah.
You're listening to Radio 2069 Worldwide. Music off the radar.
Lord, deliver me, reconsider me. Lord, make up your mind. Lord, I'm looking good, how I'm feeling good. Lord, who's a good guy? Lord, I bask in thee, what you ask of me. Lord, I do it all the time. Just let me die with my trumpet in my hand. Lord, this tyranny, oh, it's left to me. Lord, the man of the hour. Lord, the sinners we form the ministry. It's the surest game in town. Lord, you ready me, then call it blasphemy. But it's the only way I found. Just let me die with my trumpet in my hand. You're tearing us apart. Try to have another heart. It's a curse that is frozen to me. You raised us in the middle. Lord, you gave, I took a little. It's so easily done. Lord, can't you see we Lord, the china there, oh, the silverware. Lord, the way we would die, it will be a sign if you show me yours. Lord, I'll show you mine. Lord, you set it up and now you knock it down. Lord, I'll gladly do the time. Just let me die with my trumpet in my hand. Thank you. it. It took so long to admit it. Lord, you know second place prize. Lord, you steady me. I'll go ahead of thee. Lord, won't you take my hand? Lord, you're supposed to be oh so close to me. Lord, how much can you stand? Lord, you worry me. And from what I can see, if you won't play with the band, just let me die with my trumpet in my hand. Born again, let me please, Lord, again.
Common Rotation. I had a chance to see these guys at the Free Times Cafe in Toronto, and they were just great. There's three of them. They play folk music in a sort of, I guess, with a little bit of punk attitude. They're led by Adam Bush, who played Warren on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And their new album is called Isolée. And that album and all of their recordings can be purchased from commonrotation.com. Check them out. This week and every week, Music Slightly Off the Radar is brought to you by John Long and Longshot Records. Longshot. Blasting through musical mediocrity.
The Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. Here's Retro Retrospective, or I've Got $100 in My Pocket.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about four albums by a band or artist, he could be both, that are just fantastic. The artist himself, I'm talking about Matt Johnson, but you probably better know him as the musical collective Tha Tha. And Tha Tha was a band that came out in the early 1980s. It came out in that whole age of electropop and the new romantics. Human League and Howard Jones and Ultravox was coming around there. But Tha Tha was totally different. It was totally unique. It was a real breath of fresh air. CFMY, there was a station here in the 80s and has now morphed into the Edge. Used to play Tha Tha a lot and used to talk about Matt Johnson a lot. There's a number of different albums, but I'm going to start with Soul Mining. Soul Mining is his second album. The first album is called Burning Blue Soul, and I've yet to make it through it all the way yet. Okay, it's a lot of demos and stuff he did, and it's not where we really want to start our musical journey. Soul Mining is a wonderful album. It's got some of the best sounding drum machine ever, along with live drums. It's quirky guitar pop with a brain. That's the best way to sort of describe it. Three songs on the album that really, really bring this home is like Waiting for Tomorrow All My Life, and the two singles, Uncertain Smile and Perfect. And to give you an example, when other bands at that time were trying to worry about like plugging in their synthesizers and stuff, Matt Johnson in the song Perfect had a piano solo by Jules Holland from Squeeze. Like a piano solo that went on for like a minute and a half in the middle of a song. He wasn't afraid to try new things. He wasn't afraid to try new textures. He just really was a breath of fresh air in that whole sort of time. And he really, when he got to Infected, which was the next album, he also wasn't afraid of collaboration. And he wasn't afraid of tossing whatever instrument into the mix and just see what works. He all kinds of different things like percussion and different things like that. He just had incredible ways of just making them work for the songs he was working on. Infected has the great song Infected, which is just, it's so powerful. It comes out, it jumps out of the speakers at you. It has a great production sound. I don't know where he got his production at this time, but it was just a great production sound. And at the time, you know, a lot of bands at this time were like layering keyboards and they were just outlawing guitars altogether. He puts an harmonica solo up front and center on the song Heartland. He is unafraid to take whatever he can to make the song work.
And he teams up with Nina Cherry. Nina Cherry, who I think is one of the great underrated artists around. Anything that Nina Cherry does, I'm 100% behind.
Great producer, too.
Yeah, yeah. Great, great. For Soul Train to Dawn, which also has one of the best hooks on the album. And, you know, they just trade voices back and forth, and it's just wonderful. And the standout track, believe it or not, is a song called Sweet Bird of Youth, which actually opens with the line, Arabia, Arabia, Arabia. And it's all about the first Iraq War and an American soldier caught in the first Iraq War and trying to decide what to do and different things. It has radio transmissions coming in, and it's really, really, really interesting. Mind Bomb, the next album. Well, three things happened to make this a great album. First, Matt Johnson's ever-growing disenchantment with the Margaret Thatcher ruling Britain and all the problems that caused. The next thing, his bile. It's another word for this. His bile coming to the surface about the evils of organized religion. And that's best demonstrated on the song Armageddon Days, which actually has the line, if Jesus Christ was alive today, he'd be stone cold by the CIA. Perhaps the most important factor, the third factor, is the acquisition of former Smiths guitarist Johnny Marr, who will remain with Johnson for the next 6 years. And he brings a really solid sort of, I guess, punk attitude to Johnson's stuff. Johnson would get more and more progressive, and Johnny Marr would like root it down stronger and stronger to make it more simple and more sparse. And they really worked off each other really, really well. And you can really tell this on the next album, which is Dusk, which is an album that best described as dark power chords and thick bass frequencies, and the bleakest lyrically of all the albums. Johnny Marr by this time had really extended himself into the mindset of the, and he'd become a perfect punk foil for Matthew Johnson's Matthew Johnson's pop sensibilities. So songs like Dogs of Lust and Sodium Light Baby were propelled by Marr's sort of chop-chop rhythm. And then Johnson would do all these weird things. He would put like percussion here. He put horns here. He put, you know, keyboards here, backwards basses here. It was just incredible. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience to listen to this guy create all this wonderful music with all these different collaborators, all under the single name of Tha-Tha. And it's really interesting. I'm looking around the room here right now, and I'm seeing a Hank Williams songbook up there in the studio. And he did a Hank Williams album called Hanky Panky, where he did all Hank Williams songs. And it's kind of short, but if you see it used somewhere, it's definitely worth picking up. After this, he did one album called Naked Self. And then he didn't, in the early 90s, and he didn't bother doing anything anymore. I really don't think he felt that he had anything to say. It was sort of like the way Kate Bush was before her album Ariel came out last year. It was like 12 years, and she hadn't released an album, and people asked her, why haven't you released an album? She said, I've got nothing to say. I have nothing to contribute musically to the world at this point. And I think that Matt Johnson sort of reached a point. He said, I've done it. The whole thing about saying you're three albums, right? And whatever, you know, actually here it's four albums. I've said everything in those four albums I really want to say to the world. I don't need to say anything else.
More should take that.
Yeah. And anyway, if you get a chance, definitely check out Tha-Tha. Check out these four albums, Soul Mining, Infected, Mind Bomb, and Dusk. Four albums, you know, collectively creating a wonderful soundscape. Matt Johnson's inventive and musical mind, and his use of, you know, using everything but the kitchen sink, and sometimes maybe even the kitchen sink, to get the sound he wanted to. So that's it. That's my retrospective of Tha-Tha.
You're listening to Radio 2069, Rock and Beyond.
Okay, if you happen to find yourself in the Great White North, that's Toronto, Canada, with $100 in your pocket, head on down to Dave's Discs at 2350 Lakeshore Boulevard West. Dave Clark, the show's proprietor, will be happy to regale you with stories of rock and roll misdeeds and triumphs and point you towards the good stuff. And while you're at it, tell us about your favorite music store. Let's keep those independent music stores alive and thriving. After all, when they're gone, there's only the other guys.
Clean up on aisle 4.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's time for What It's Worth.
This portion of the show is brought to you by no one.
Okay. It's time for Crafties for What It's Worth. And tonight, here in the studio, Crafty is going to give you the inside take on fake hype.
I'm ranting tonight, aren't I?
You're a ranting fool.
I didn't say I was a ranting fool. I'm just ranting. Fake hype, 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 overhype. The first time I ever, I think, remember overhype was Elvis Costello at the Alma Combo. I was in a punk rock band. Punk rock was supposed to be this do-it-yourself, kind of homegrown, no record company, we're on our own, this is a new generation, this is a new sound, you know, the revolt against the man. And here's Elvis Costello playing the Alma Combo, a bar that holds maybe 300 people with $25,000, $35,000, $40,000 worth of hype. Posters, t-shirts, it was a full record onslaught. It was a full mass of radio, everything. And I'm listening to the thing, and Allison, that's real punk rock. Yeah, I feel threatened. You know, it was the beginning of New Wave. It was the beginning of commercial punk. Elvis Costello was never a punk. It was New Wave. A very good songwriter. Great album. I'm Not the Distant Song, Allison. Great song. The album is solid. But this was the first time I went, wow. Don't believe the hype, because this is just not what it was all about. I mean, up the road, you know, there was an underground bar, the Crash and Burn, and, you know, people were playing that, and there was the Vile Tones, and you know, getting kicked out of the Piccadilly Tube. And
I mean, the Diodes were there, too.
Yeah, and they were playing this thing. Yeah. I mean, I actually got to open up with Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy at the
Thin Lizzy, there's a...
What were the Thin Lizzy? See, there's a band that was embraced by some. They're playing an after hours bar. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was what was going on, and all this stuff like that, and the Ugly and Screaming Sam and those guys. You know, they were the ones, and Johnny and the G Rays, and what was happening. And it wasn't Elvis Costello. That was the beginning of New Wave. And after him was Cyndi Lauper. And I'm sorry, I see Cyndi Lauper and Elvis Costello in exactly the same breath. That's New Wave. That's not punk rock. So, but it's been hyped. You know, it was so hyped. It's just, you know, the new sound. No, it wasn't, but it was to be. It was when the record companies, like I said before, you got the end of every era. At the end of every era, there's a revolution. And then in the 50s, it was rock and roll. When the rock and roll, black people started dancing, white people started dancing to black music, everybody freaked. The record companies didn't know what was going on. Kids were dancing this music. Rock and roll was slang. You know, Willie and Hanjai was slang for jerking off. Rock and roll was basically about sex. These people are dancing this music, and it's played by black people. Like, it was a revolution. So what does the record companies do? They get control of it, and they get a hold of it, and they turn it into the mid-60s. You know, and you've got Pat Boone doing a whole lot of shaking going on. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Pat Boone ruined more black songs.
Hold on, easy, easy. Anyway, in a bow tie. And so at the end of the 60s, you have the revolution to, you know, psychedelic. You've got Marty Balin from Jefferson Airplane. It's hard to believe that they were once revolutionary. There he is in his bare feet signing a record contract. They ask him to sign. He goes, oh, I'm not signing anything. You go, why? Birds don't sign contracts. So this is a revolution. The record companies don't know, but this is what's happening. This is the underground. The end of the, of course, that turned in, it's Jefferson Airplane is the greatest example. They turned into Jefferson Starship, corporate rock at its worst, at the worst. We built this shitty on, oh God, whatever. But that was what punk was, was fighting against. And, you know, I'm a big Deep Purple fan, but I'm sorry, California Jam and Ritchie Blackmore kicking his guitar for 3 minutes while he's high on whatever, you know, and that's... And no, that's why I dropped out of the the rock scene I was in when I was walking down Young Street, and this band Zoom was playing at the Colonial Tavern, and I know that bass player walking. He says, "Hey, that's a guitar player. We could use a guitar player." I jumped up the stage, and next thing you know, I'm playing in one of Toronto's first punk rock bands, and I liked their attitude. I remember talking to Motor Mike from Motor X, I think he changed his name to, from the Viletones, and the Viletones hadn't even played there yet. They hadn't even played a gig. Teenage Head used to come down on Wednesday, so it's very much early in the scene.
Yeah.
And these guys, I just love their ideas. Like, they're anti-corporate. If you went up to the Gasworks and the Piccadilly Tubes, guys in silk shirts doing Foreigner, and, you know, just, you know, with all his big boofy hair, it was big, you know, it's just like, whoa, man. I really dug the scene, not for that long. I was out of the scene. I was in the scene early and out really early for other reasons we'll get into another time, but... The hype, I think the beginning and the end of it was like the hype. And but the hype today is, I remember the first time when Now Magazine first came out. Like, I died for Now Magazine. I used to buy New Music Express and Melody Maker from England just to look at those columns where they show the bands that are playing and read reviews so it looked like there was a scene happening. Or the Village Voice. People don't know, but in the 70s, there was nothing to read. There was nothing. There was some little underground magazines if you're lucky. But there was nothing. There was nothing. So I used to read these things, and just to, so I could feel it was part of a scene. There was something going on. And I remember Now Magazine came out, and I go, oh, this is great. We've got our own now. They got a few columns, you know, some clubs and bands and stuff like that. And they're hyping this band. I'm going, wow, I got to go see this band. They sound like they're fantastic. And I go there. Oh, God, they're awful. What is this? Oh, it's the editor's cousin. And so that's another one. Like, you know, you hype this band. Oh, they went to school together. Or, as I was thinking today when we were having dinner, and they're listening to some record that, you know, the drummer really couldn't play. And it's, the band, the song was maybe pretty good, but it was just sort of music, you know, kind of for people that, it's like these people are listening to music that by people that can't really play because they can't really play. And it makes them feel comfortable. I don't know if it's that or whatever. I'm not saying the elitist, the other thing. I mean, if we were all just listening to the greatest music in the world, would we be listening to 12-year-old girls play Paganini, you know, Chinese girls play Paganini with one hand, you know. I've said it before, I say it again. It's not about just musicianship, but there's, you know, like, if you're going to hype something up, you know, let's live up to the hype. And it's hard. I never liked a lot of bands because of the hype. I could never get into Van Halen until after David Lee Roth had left and the band had broken up pretty much because of the hype. It turned me off. Elvis Costello, I'm still trying to get into. And the hype really hit me. I was young and impressionable. But when I hear too much hype and you go there, it's just like, you know, it's just way too much. Like, but I mean, you got to hype up a band. Excitement's good, but you know, too much hype, you go there and hype in the long run can kill you. I'm just reading the you know, the last days of Keith Moon and you know, he had to live up to the hype. I mean, he made all the hype and all the publicity, and in the end, that hype killed him. So yeah, too much hype, you know. It's like too much production. It's like too much anything. I guess you can have too much of anything and too much hype. But I don't think any one incident strikes me as much as the Elvis Costello El Macambo show, which was a great show. I've heard the live recording. It's really good. New wave, not punk rock.
That may not be what you think,
but that's how we feel.
Over and out from the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show, Program 5. You've been listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. I mean, what did you think you were listening to?